Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Damage Report. I am John Iadarola, and at least for the beginning part of this episode, I'm going to be running solo, but we do hopefully have a pair of awesome guests going to be joining us a little bit later on in the show. We're going to have the return of Kara Eastman, who's running a congressional candidate in Nebraska. We're going to be talking about the midterms generally, the Democrats' strategy. Are they focusing on the issues? There's a lot of debate about exactly how they should be selling themselves as a party. Now, she is a great example of this approach because, of course, she is a strong progressive, as you saw last week when she was on the program. We're going to be talking more about the issues that she is focusing her campaign around and some of the fairly vicious and dishonest attack ads coming from the other side against her. We're also hoping to be joined by the nation's Jamie Kittman, who did a great report on toxic flame retardants, which if that sounds like a sort of esoteric, weird thing to talk about, you should know that they have been found literally everywhere on Earth, these flame retardants. They have been found in the blubber of whales in the Arctic. They've been found in the dust in classrooms in China. They are everywhere, and they're absolutely horrendous for your health. So we're going to be talking about those retardants, and also why is it that they have been allowed to get everywhere in the world? It actually comes back to our government and our lack of regulation. So we're going to be talking about that. In terms of the news, I am going to address the absolutely magnificent web of lies around the caravan working its way through Mexico. That's going to be our big story today. Both the lies that are being told about it, the truth about those who are in this caravan, and then a little bit later on, we're going to have a video from Emma Vigeland of Rebel HQ, where she talks with Trump supporters, and one of them is incredibly honest about what he would like to see done to these people attempting to cross over the border. We're going to be closing out the show. Jared Jackson is going to be joining me because Megyn Kelly has some thoughts on Halloween costumes. Some of the most offensive and thankfully rare things to see on Halloween. She doesn't get what the big deal is. And so we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on as well. But first, the caravans. You are being lied to, not right now on my show, but in general, by the president, by right-wing media, by everyone who is focusing on this caravan of migrants crossing Mexico in an attempt to scare the hell out of you and get you to vote Republican in these midterms. Virtually every way that lies could be told about who these people are, why they have decided to cross Mexico, who is funding and organizing the group, all of it is shrouded in incredibly self-serving, vicious, racist lies. And I'm going to address some of those lies specifically. But before I get to the lies, I want to tell you about who these people really are and why they are really crossing. We're not going to go too in-depth because honestly, it is so obvious if you simply listen to quotes from people actually in this caravan that you can just trust what they are actually saying. So understand that these people are coming from multiple countries. And some of the countries that the migrants are starting in before they've joined this caravan are some of the most violent, sort of civil war-torn, dangerous areas where it is very understandable that some people, especially mothers with young children, would want to get out of there. And so you have people coming from areas of Honduras and El Salvador, countries that, despite the generally anti-immigrant sort of fervor that has taken over our country, even back during Obama, people from those countries were given temporary protected status because we understood as a country that yes, obviously if these people are able to get out, they deserve a chance at a better life where they are less likely, I should say, to be victimized by sexual assault and violence and economic exploitation, human trafficking and things like that. Now, obviously Donald Trump wants to change that approach to people from these countries, and he's making that very clear with this caravan. But understand that that is where the vast majority of the 5,000 to 7,000 people are coming from. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the individuals, because there has been some thankfully good reporting. Think Progress has collected quotations from some of the people involved in these caravans. One woman, a Honduran woman named Fanny Rodriguez, actually told the New York Times, "We're traveling to find a better future for my daughters. We aren't going because we want fancy things. I don't have to give them luxuries, only what's necessary. That my daughters don't lack food, that my daughters don't lack clothes, things like that." One of the groups that is helping to organize this, sort of local activists, say, in terms of these conspiracy theories that we're going to get into about billionaires in the Democratic Party organizing this, Arenio Mujica said, "No one is capable of organizing this many people. They are motivated by two factors, hunger and death." And so thankfully, along the way, as these people have been marching many, many miles, locals in these areas in Mexico and elsewhere have been sort of lining the streets, prepared to give them food and clothing and things like that. The migrants, in many cases, have worn through their shoes walking. They're walking on swollen, lacerated feet, sustaining themselves by singing together, by chanting things like "Si se puede" and things like that. These are people, obviously, and 100% understandably, if you possess even the most basic level of human empathy, are simply trying to improve their lives and the lives generally of their children. In some cases, these are the elderly. In many cases, these are children. The idea that these are Middle Eastern terrorists, ISIS fighters, things like that, not only is that something that is verifiable, if you want to make that claim, you can go and you can talk to these people. They are literally out in the open. You can take pictures of them, you can interview them, you can do all of those things. It doesn't even make sense on its face. And yet, we have a significant portion of this country, 20 or 30%, that will believe literally anything Donald Trump says. He is counting on that. And that is why he is saying things like this. "They have a lot of everybody in that group. It's a horrible thing, and it's a lot bigger than 5,000 people." Now, it has grown, so thankfully, at the time he was saying things about the size, he was actually lying, but it has grown to that size. "They have a lot of everybody in that group." Now, he has not gone back to his favorite line about bad hombres, but he has said that they're incredibly tough, hardened criminals, despite the lack of any evidence whatsoever of criminals. Now, it's possible that there are criminals in that group. And when they come and seek asylum, that is something that they will look into. Along the way, many news outlets have embedded themselves with this caravan, interviewing people. Fox News, if they wanted to, could do that. But they seem to actually have very little interest in finding out who these people are. There's a lot of speculation, a lot of hypothesizing about how dangerous these individuals could be, but no actual interest in using the gigantic level of resources that Fox News and other right-wing, generally billionaire-supported groups have to actually find out. And that is why organizations like TYT and my show need to help to do some of that work, at least spreading the information that the New York Times and others have been able to do on the ground. Now, in terms of ISIS or unknown Middle Easterners, as Donald Trump says, being there, a former senior intelligence official told NBC News that there's no evidence of any Middle Eastern terrorists hiding in the caravan. The White House has not responded to requests for comment regarding any of Trump's claims. So he makes the claims, and they just have nothing to say about it. And by the way, I just want to make this one point. In terms of him saying that he wants to have his cake and eat it too, and the cake is a very racist cake in this particular instance. So these are people from Central and South America, generally Central America. And so he wants to scare you about that because he knows that his base is very scared of brown people of the South and Central American variety. So they are hardened criminals. But he also wants to scare you with terrorism. And so there's Middle Easterners too. And the thing is, for a regular Trump supporter, it's like, oh yeah, it's Central Americans and it's Middle Easterners, and they're just together. It's all the same. It's not the same at all. These people are visually dissimilar in terms of language and culture, all of that, incredibly dissimilar. They literally do not share a common language. But there is so little critical thought coming out of the Trump supporters that they imagine, oh yeah, it's just a big group of mixed Middle Easterners and Central Americans. And nobody can tell. You know, the people from Honduras don't think it's bizarre at all that there's just a gigantic group of Syrian terrorists amongst them. That is something that they actually believe. They find that very easy to believe. Oh, I see it. Thank you. And that is the country that we live in, where you can just spread, you know, evidence-free conspiracy theories like this, and people will accept it. Now, thankfully, reporters have been doing their duty, I guess, in trying to push back against some of this. And so they questioned Donald Trump about some of his claims in this clip.
What you should do, John, go into the middle of the caravan, take your cameras and search, okay? Search. No. Take your camera, go into the middle and search. You're going to find MS-13, you're going to find Middle Eastern, you're going to find everything. And guess what? We're not allowing them in our country. We want safety. We want safety.
You're going to find MS-13, you're going to find Middle Eastern. Not Middle Eastern people, just you're going to find Middle Eastern. So we have an election coming up. I'm just going to come back to this constantly in the middle of clips that aren't necessarily about the election. And I think I'm reminded every day as I watch clips like this that you have a person who wields more singular power than possibly anyone else in the world. That when asked about his insane claims about the presence of terrorists in a group like this, yells at reporters, "You go search for them." Not, here is why I believe this, here is why we should be concerned, here are the intelligence reports that I am basing my statements on. I will say whatever insane thing I want, and then it's up to you to find out if it's true or not. With the added, you know, like second effect of that when you find no evidence, I won't listen to you anyway. And so the thing is, he says, take your cameras and go. And look, there are already cameras there. A number of news organizations, as I said, are already embedded with the caravan. He doesn't care if they don't find anything. He is doing this either because he has believed the sorts of things that he has heard on Fox News, or more likely it is simply a political strategy to get white racists riled up in advance of the midterms. But thankfully, people like you who watch programs like this, who might have empathy for what these people are actually going through, understand the truth behind it, and hopefully you can help to signal boost that as well. We're going to take a short break. We come back a little bit more on this, and then what do Trump supporters actually want to do if this caravan makes it to the border?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Break that down. Welcome back to the show, everyone. So, look, I want to talk a little bit more about the caravan. I hate talking about this topic because I know that on one level or another, no matter how many caveats I give, no matter how much I attempt to actually shed light on the real lived experience in real time of the people in it, to some extent, I am helping the right, because they want to talk about this, because the caravan simply existing and a little bit of media attention being on it for some reason benefits them, because we are an incredibly xenophobic people and they have been able to ride that to great electoral success. So I have resisted talking about this. I hate talking about it, even though we should of course be talking about it, because we, as humans, should use this as an opportunity to acknowledge that not only are the lives of these 7,000 or so people obviously in a terrible state, and we should be doing whatever is necessary as a people to help them, but it is just a symptom of the greater problem in many of these countries that, by the way, we as Americans have helped to contribute to, perhaps not on an individual level, but certainly in terms of our government policy. Economically, in terms of the drug war, militarily, we have helped to destabilize many of these countries in the same way that we have the Middle East. And in the same way as in the Middle East, when suddenly, after decades of exploiting and destabilizing these countries, taking down their governments, replacing them with military unstable regimes, then there's insecurity and instability and people want to leave. And we act shocked and chagrined at what we have wrought, while not acknowledging that we had a hand in rotting it in the first place. We are so amazingly ahistorical as a people that we go around the world just knocking things over, and then we look out our window at it and we just say, "Ah, it doesn't look very good." We call them S-hole countries and things like that. That is what we do. And so it puts us in the media in a terrible position where I want to talk about the conditions in Honduras and El Salvador and talk about why there is so much violence, why some of these places are the murder capitals of the world, why you have these caravans and what we can do as people to help them out. And in so doing, I have to help the right maintain their hold on power potentially. So that's amazing. But understand that the lies that Donald Trump is saying about the caravan, they're not just about what's going on in Mexico and down in Central America. He's telling lies, again, easily verifiable or debunkable lies about what's going on here in California as well. He said, take a look. They want to get out of sanctuary cities. Many places in California want to get out of sanctuary cities. A reporter asked, where are the riots that he's talking about? Where have they actually happened? He says, yeah, it's rioting in some cases. So look, when he says that in this caravan, there are unknown Middle Eastern terrorists, I understand that a random person living in Ohio can't really check that directly. They should know that there's media that they can trust to say whether that's true or not, or at least look into it. But he is saying there are riots going on in sanctuary cities in the US. And in particular, in previous instances where he said that, he said specifically in California. It is so easy to know whether that is true or not. And he is relying on the actual lack of interest on the part of his supporters who will hear that and get riled up about it. Get riled up, but not actually care to know whether it's true or not. He is relying on that complete lack of interest. And it's amazing. It's an amazing thing when you know that you have people who will get so fired up that they will go out and vote based on this, but don't care even the slightest to find out if what's riling them up is actually true. That is a weird psychological state to know that your supporters live in on a daily basis. Are there riots in sanctuary cities? No, there are not riots in sanctuary cities. Reporters living in North California have said that it's not happening. Down in Southern California saying that's not happening. I live actually in Southern California, and I can tell you that if the riots are happening, they're not happening in any parts of the LA that I am driving around on a daily basis. But again, if I could bring this back to the elections, Donald Trump is such a blatant and flagrant liar. It's honestly, I think it's getting worse. And it's difficult to make that claim, because how do you actually quantify the sheer, not just the number of lies, I know that PolitiFact tries to do that, but how fact-free they've become? And again, speaking as a member of the media, I understand at this point, I have been through this cycle several thousand times. He says there's riots in sanctuary cities. I say that is a lie. There's no evidence of that. And it doesn't matter. There's this claim that goes around that good, honest facts will beat out lies every time. We just need more speech, all of that. And that is a great philosophy. I love that. I wish that that was true. But I don't see any evidence of it. This is a great instance. This is the most easy to knock down lie that he has told this week, I'll say at least. I don't want to go too far. And none of his supporters will call him out on it. No one sitting in Tennessee or in Houston is like, well, that seems weird. I haven't actually seen that on the news. Even Fox News has no footage of that. That's weird. And yet it continues. Now, the question is, will this actually not only fire up his supporters, but will it actually help them to win in the elections that are just a couple of weeks away? So Fox News wants to find out. So Steve Doocy of Fox and Friends talked with some at least self-identified independent voters about this issue. And here is what they had to say.
So what should the United States do if those 7,000 people, by the time it gets here, it could be 10,000, it could be 20,000. What should the United States do about those people?
This is the mightiest country on the planet. I think we can handle a caravan of people unarmed coming to this country.
So let them in.
And, well, I'm saying to process them properly.
Right. Okay, Kathy, real quick.
Real quick, I think that the immigration crisis that we're seeing is a result of the failure of the two Democratic parties to actually engage the issue. Mm-hmm. Instead, they use it like a partisan football.
Sure. You don't like that. John, real quick, on the immigration.
There's a humanitarian crisis taking mm-hmm. place in Central America, and yet this issue gets turned into a complete political football. There's very little honest discussion about what's actually happening. It gets turned into talking points.
And Aaron.
Yeah, treating this as an invasion is a bad idea, and it's going to end horribly if it is treated such as that way. So I think people have to realize, yeah, these are human beings coming here, and there needs to be a real solution offered in dealing with it.
Sure.
Sure. Wow. That I've come out of that Fox News video feeling better than I can't tell you how long ago it was that happened specifically with Fox News content. So those are people who identify as independents. Don't simply accept that is true. In the past, we found out later on that they were actually political strategists and things like that. So God only knows. But I have a feeling that Steve Ducey did not convene that panel so that he could showcase how moderate and understanding of this issue apparently independent voters are. But I can't say for sure. I was not involved in his production meetings. But it gives me a little bit of hope. Maybe it does for you as well. We know that there is a great deal of xenophobia in Trump's base. It's possible, maybe, that other Americans, even Americans that don't identify as progressives or liberals, might be growing a little bit more understanding on this issue. I don't want to count on that. And I don't want to spur any sort of apathy, individually, issue-based, or in general when it comes to these midterms. But that gives me a little bit of hope. And that is in rare supply lately. Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Emma Vigeland went to a Trump rally. Now we're going to erase all of the added hope that we just got when we come back from this break. So in our last block, we showed you a Fox News panel of independent voters talking about this caravan and what they'd like to see done. And they were very moderate. They seemed understanding. They didn't necessarily all want to just let these people in, become citizens tomorrow or anything like that. But they were pretty understanding. What about Trump supporters? What do Trump supporters think should happen when people are trying to cross the border? Well, thankfully, in this case, we can turn to Rebel HQ's Emma Vigeland, who's previously appeared on the show. She was at a Trump rally in Mesa, Arizona. And here is a little interaction she had with a Trump supporter.
What would solve the whole thing in the border if they would just start shooting? Only shoot a couple, and they would go home.
You think deterrence would work?
If they would shoot.
I really feel like if the people from Mexico would come here and emerge into the American culture, but they really, I see it, they want to make America part of Mexico. And I'm opposed to that.
I would love the demographics to change if they came here legally. It would be fine. I'd welcome them. Yeah, I'd welcome them. We have to keep track of everybody coming in here to avoid another 9/11. You can't just let people run across the border. So I'd welcome them. I'd love to help them. I'd love to hire them if they came here legally.
9/11, they were just Saudi Arabians coming, right? Not through immigration, but
that's
just...
It's the whole policy that's the problem.
No one that I know that supports Trump wants that division. I think that Tucker Carlson takes a really, you know, edgy stance on things in order to, you know, rile up a crowd generally. And people like to watch that.
In 2018, white supremacy is edgy. I guess. I don't know. Wow, man. Look, if you don't already follow Rebel HQ and Emma's videos, it is amazing. She, like every week, she puts herself into those environments. She talks to people. She's so level-headed. When that guy said they should start shooting people, she kept it cool. Like, God help us if Emma Vigeland ever starts playing poker. We're doomed. But I want to respond to some of the things that were said there. So obviously the worst was they should just start shooting. They should just start shooting a few and that'll scare people off. And she referred to it as deterrence, I think, to not scare him off. But what he is talking about is murdering people who are exercising fully legal international rights to apply for asylum. So I just want to reiterate that in case there's been so much deception and lies coming out of the right. Applying for asylum is not illegal. It is not in any way illegal. It is not in any way a circumvention of US laws. We have asylum laws in the US and internationally for exactly this sort of situation. People leaving war-torn, violent countries to come and legally integrate into our country. That is what these people are potentially looking for. That is in the vast majority of cases, whether with this caravan or a different caravan or outside of all of the caravans, that is what they're doing. You have the legal right to apply for asylum. Now, most of the people in that crowd probably are not aware of that. And that is why they turn to just start gunning them down. That is not actually legal. That, I'm assuming, would be war crimes. And hopefully we would have some sort of consequences for that. And by the way, it also reminds me of something else. I don't know if you've been listening to this show long enough to know when we were reading excerpts from the old French racist novel, Camp of the Saints, that Steve Bannon and many in the Trump administration seem to think is like the new Ayn Rand. That is what you're supposed to base your political philosophy on. And I'm not going to read you the whole thing again or anything like that, but you should understand that it is an old white supremacist novel about people in Europe needing to stand up against this tide of migrants coming from India and Africa and the Middle East. And when these huge masses of people in a gigantic caravan of 600,000 people or more start to cross the Mediterranean, good Europeans need to get on the beaches and start mowing people down with machine guns. And again, that is the book Steve Bannon lauds as awesome. And Tucker Carlson, by the way, has had on guests talking about how awesome Camp of the Saints is. Do you really think that on the right, they're not thinking of Camp of the Saints when they're talking about these caravans, when they're talking about stopping these people at the border? Do you think they're not actually motivated by the same sort of white supremacist, pro-violent, pro-murder stance? Tucker Carlson certainly is. He's very much familiar with that. And so it starts to sort of filter down through the ranks, and you get Trump supporters saying, we should literally kill these people. Now, thankfully, I don't think that that's the majority opinion amongst Trump supporters. You have other people, like the woman that Emma talked to, who said she would be okay with it if people from Mexico and these other countries would just integrate into American society and culture. Instead, they want to turn it into Mexico. What is that based on? Honestly, is that based on interviews with people in the caravan? Is that them saying that they want, like, Texas, it needs to be reclaimed for Mexico? Is that actually a position that these people hold? No. No. And if it was, it would be something that we would battle out in our culture. But what has actually been the experience in America across so many different immigrant groups coming in over the years? It has generally been an improvement of both communities, like sort of reinvigorating of our culture by the inclusion of new elements of food and politics, thought, music, art, all of that. That is what actually happens. And yet, now and at every step along the way, we have been horrified at the prospect that this historical pattern will not continue. It's always different in the present. Sure, all of those other groups integrated in and we're better for it, but not this time. This time we should be scared. And so you're seeing that play out in real time here. So thank you to Emma for the 9/11 thing. Thankfully, she already addressed it. It's absolutely ridiculous. He seems to think that 9/11 was perpetrated by Mexicans who crossed the border or Saudi Arabians who crossed the border. And that same guy, by the way, who is so terrified by these Saudi terrorists, do you think he is pushing for Trump to do something about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi? Probably not. But I do want to move on to one other story, though. George Soros is a name that you have probably heard any number of different times, generally coming from right-wingers. Although he is a funder and philanthropist of some left-wing causes, he's only really talked about by the right. He is this boogeyman who is literally behind everything, including the caravan that has been the focus of so much attention from Donald Trump at Fox News recently. He's back in the news because he was almost murdered by a domestic terrorist. A bomb was found near his home. Law enforcement officials in Bedford, New York, told the New York Times that an employee working at Soros' home found the package in the mailbox and called police, who were forced to proactively detonate the device. We later found out that it was a bomb with explosive powder. Now, George Soros was not at home at the time the bomb was discovered, so he was not killed. If it had exploded, he would not be killed. But just some people who had the misfortune of working for George Soros might have been murdered by this domestic terrorist, who we have to assume has been listening to and believed the many lies and conspiracy theories about George Soros that have been spread by the right over the years, up to and including this week. And so what is the reality about George Soros? He donates to Democratic candidates and progressive causes. He's given at least $18 billion to his Open Society Foundations to promote democracy and human rights around the world. He's previously supported people like Barack Obama and I believe John Kerry back in the day. That is the actual reality. But if you talk to right-wingers, he is in support of literally everything. Did you know that my car was actually bought through Soros money? I didn't know that, actually, since I never got it. But we're bought by Soros. All left-wing media is owned by Soros. They probably own MSNBC, which somehow gets lumped in to the left wing when it comes to George Soros stuff. Look, what you need to understand, if you are not daily dwelling in 4chan and the Donald on Reddit and all of that, you may not understand that George Soros is a very useful symbol for the generalized anti-Semitism and extremism on the right. George Soros is Jewish, and because of that, he is behind everything. God help him, of course, when it comes to the media. We all know that. But he is just standing in for the same sorts of boogeymen of the Jewish left that have existed forever. And the right wing will always turn to that. For all of their supposed support for Israel and all of that, when it comes to America, when it comes to Jewish people operating in America, there is always going to be suspicion at best, if not outright hostility, and in this case, murderous intent. And so George Soros, who lately has been blamed, let's see. Let's go through some of the greatest hits recently. Donald Trump said this back during the Kavanaugh hearings. The very rude elevator screamers are paid professionals only looking to make senators look bad. Don't fall for it. Also, look at all of the professionally made identical signs paid for by Soros and others. So you might assume that because he is the president of the United States, if he claims that an individual has supported this movement, that he would have some evidence for that. Well, welcome to 2018. You must have just woken up. No, there is no evidence whatsoever. He simply says it. These people who he's now referring to as a mob are paid for by George Soros, even though they are in no way paid for by George Soros. But we've been talking about the caravan. What about that? Well, Congressman Matt Gaetz, just less than a week ago, spread this video. Footage in Honduras giving cash to women and children to join the caravan and storm the US border at election time. Soros? He's a congressman. And he's not Donald Trump, so you might expect better of him, but he doesn't require any evidence whatsoever to say that this caravan of people who have joined spontaneously to try to improve their lives is funded by a particular Jewish billionaire in America. You simply say it. You say that all of the things that you're scared about, all of the things that are making your life worse, whether in reality or just imagined, all of it can be traced back to the Democratic Party, to the left, and if necessary, to a particular billionaire, George Soros. And hell, if in a country of so much extremism and radicalism and white supremacy and violence, if that leads to a bomb being left in his mailbox, man, you can't make an omelet without scrambling some eggs when it comes to election time. Now, thankfully, this time, George Soros was not murdered by this domestic terrorist. We might or might not find out who it was, hopefully before he sends another bomb his way or to other funders of left-wing causes. But do you think that they're really going to moderate their messaging around this? Do you think that Donald Trump is going to avoid baselessly accusing George Soros of funding these sorts of things? I don't have that kind of hope. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, from this break, Kara Eastman's going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about the midterms, her very tight battle for Nebraska congressional seat. And we're going to talk hopefully a little bit about the Democratic strategy more in general after this. With the midterms fast approaching, we turn to some very tight congressional races with huge stakes where awesome progressives are running against some of the worst Republicans in the country. And in that vein, I would like to welcome back to the show congressional candidate Kara Eastman. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Glad to have you here. So there's a few different things I'd like to talk about in your race, which now is in the closing weeks. I saw recently on Twitter that you had done like a tweet thread about strategy and messaging and differentiating yourself from your Republican opponent in terms of you trying to focus on a positive outlook, the policies that you're supporting, and he has gone in a slightly different direction. Can you talk a little bit about that distinction?
Sure. Well, when I launched this campaign, You know, I'm tired of the way that our political system is and the way campaigns are run, and it gets so negative. And I just want to know the facts and what the candidates are putting out and what they support. And then I'm smart enough to be able to make my own decision. And so I feel like the voters deserve that same from me. And so we've really run just a large grassroots campaign, but with a very positive message about what we could be fighting for right now in the country, because I believe that it's better to fight for something than just be against something, although I'm against a lot of things right now. but my opponent, on the other hand, his strategy has been to use Republican talking points to put out ads that spread false information about who I am and what I stand for, and to scare the American public into voting against a terrifying Democrat who just wants people to have health care and debt-free education.
That does sound scary when you put it that way.
It's pretty scary, yeah.
So one of the big trends in this election is like first-time candidates, outsider candidates, really like making their mark on the Democratic Party in a way that I haven't previously seen. Now, in some areas, that has actually led to a little bit of difficulty back in the primary. Some of these new candidates found that some of the traditional establishment groups, which do, you know, help to fund these primary campaigns, do endorsements and things like that, they were very hands-off, if not even hostile in some cases, two candidates like that. What was your experience in that area in terms of some of these traditional large groups sort of getting involved in the primary process?
Well, for us, most of the establishment groups stayed out or supported my primary opponent. There were groups like the PCCC and Justice Democrats that were very supportive of me in the primary, and I'm grateful for that. But after the primary, most, if not all, of those groups have come back in and have been great, and we've done really well with their help.
Yeah, and now that you've moved past the primary, are some of those groups, I mean, considering that, you know, a lot of these races, including yours, this is you know, pretty tight. Are they now being more supportive now that you've locked down the nomination?
Well, it's hard for me to compare it to something because this is the first time I've run for a federal office, but I do feel like we've had a lot of support. The DCCC, you know, groups like Emily's List and NARAL and Sierra Club have now come in and endorsed me. And so, and I'm grateful for their help.
Okay, good. You actually hit most of the ones I was concerned about. So I'm glad to hear that they are actually being more supportive now. So you were talking about a positive vision for the future. So I've been trying to make the case daily on the show that, you know, the stakes in this election like could not be higher. If you are lucky enough to win, if the Democrats indeed are able to retake the House, what are some of the things that you think you could be helpful in pushing for? Like, what are some of the things that people should have on the horizon and want make them want to go out and vote, want to see a change in the composition of the House?
Well, first, and one of the biggest issues in this district now we've knocked about 140,000 doors, and healthcare comes up the most of any issue. And so I want to work on healthcare. It's the reason I'm running. I believe that everybody in this country should have access to healthcare and that we shouldn't have to choose between paying our prescription drugs and putting food on the table. So that's why I'm running. And that's one of the things that I think we should be fighting for right now more than ever, because this is a crisis in our country. I meet far too many people that are drowning in medical bills or having health issues, and they're scared. They're scared that the Republican Party is going to take away their health care. And this has real ramifications for people. And I think that if you're a policymaker who's in Washington and perhaps you didn't come from any kind of background where you meet regular working people every day, that maybe you don't understand the plight that Americans go through.
No, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because actually I'm very curious about that. I mean, you've been talking to so many voters, both in this general election, but also back during the primary. There are these various narratives about what is driving people to vote, what is getting people fired up and things like that. But based on your experience, I mean, you mentioned healthcare right there, but what are the other issues that the more national media is not getting about what's driving political engagement in these midterms?
So while healthcare is the number one thing we hear at the doors, student debt comes up a lot. I have a lot of people in the district who are drowning in debt. And this is not just impacting young people, although it's a huge issue for young people. You've got parents who have their own student loans, and now they're taking on their kids' student loans. And senior citizens, you've got 20% of senior citizens who have student loan debt. This inhibits people's ability to buy a home, to take a vacation. And the fact that the federal government is profiting off these student loans, where we now have over $1.5 trillion in student debt in our country, this is something that we have to fix. And there are some great creative solutions in front of us to do that. So that's another thing that as a board member of a community college, I'm excited to get in there and do.
Well, I want to thank you for joining our show once again. I mean, yours is one of the races that we're going to be watching, like most with bated breath on election day. Your opponent is Republican Don Bacon. I think that if people are paying attention to your race, the distinction between you two are very clear at this point. So good luck in your upcoming election.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're going to take one more break here. When we come back, Jared Jackson is going to be joining us in studio to break down Megyn Kelly's recent defense of blackface as an option this Halloween. Welcome back to the Damage Report. I am now joined by Jared Jackson in studio.
Wow.
It's like a Wednesday.
You know what? You come early for JR Wednesday. You come on a Tuesday for JR Wednesday.
This is like the when there's a lot of like big release hype, and then actually the movie comes out the night before. We've got JR. So the reason JR is joining us is Megyn Kelly is still on TV somehow. Man, once you get on TV, they can never take you off. It doesn't matter what you do or don't do.
Unless your name is Cenk Uygur.
Unless it's Cenk Uygur, then you get out of here. So she was being asked about, I think they were talking about Halloween costumes, but blackface came up, and she has some very interesting thoughts about it. Here's the video.
But what is racist? Because so truly, you do get in trouble if you are a white person who puts on blackface for Halloween, or a black person who puts on whiteface for Halloween. Like when I was a kid, that was okay as long as you were dressing up as like a character.
If somebody feels like something is offensive to them, then you should say it, and that's fair game.
And you should be able to take it
if you're going to dress up like that.
Yeah, you got to be able to take it.
Yeah.
One of the things I mentioned, it was a controversy on The Real Housewives of New York with Luann, as she dresses Diana Ross. And she made her skin look darker than it really is. And people said that that was racist. And I don't know, I felt like, who doesn't love Diana Ross? She wants to look like Diana Ross for one day. I don't know how like that got racist on Halloween.
Now, let's as context, let's just acknowledge that Megyn Kelly up until this point has never said anything racially questionable. but she is here speaking out in defense of blackface as long as it's a character. What do we think about that?
Well, that's what blackface was. It was a character. It was a caricature of black folks. So, I don't know. It's not that hard. It's hard for me to really believe, because I don't think Megyn Kelly is uneducated. I don't think she has some ignorance, which doesn't mean you're dumb. That's what people have to understand. You have ignorance when you don't have knowledge of a certain situation. Everyone has ignorance in some field, because everyone doesn't know everything, right? So when you don't know something, and you're actually truly curious about why this is such a problem, you know what you do? You look it up. Mm-hmm. And a cursory search will allow you to know that the history of blackface and why it's a problem now. So, and why it's called racist. I don't get it. People love Diana Ross. It doesn't matter. The history of it and the reason why, now it has racial undertones, or it harkens back to our racial history, which is one of the problems that our society has, is admitting our past problems that still exist and have perpetuated into today. So back in the day, blackface was when white actors would dress up and act like minstrel versions or caricature versions of black folks. Very racist, very over the top, and a lot of times detrimental to that person or that character, which allows society to think, this is how black folks are. Mm-hmm. They're animal-like, they're wild, they're stupid, and they should be laughed at. And also, it took jobs away from black folks who were in acting. So it eliminated the possibility for someone to have this American dream of maybe becoming an actor and maybe playing in a normal role. Because all of them weren't caricatures or like jokey characters. Some of them were characters in a movie. And they're like, we're just not going to have any black folks in this because we're still going to continue to keep black folks out of our system.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect. There's what perpetuated people to believe about black folks and then carry out, say, killings, unfairness in the judicial system, which continues today. So if you want to know about how blackface affected our society, just read a little bit. I just scratched the surface. There's a lot more.
Well, she seems to be implying that she doesn't know about that history. Do you actually believe that, or do you think that she just doesn't care? Because she's a grown woman. She's obviously an intelligent, educated woman. She's been around these issues for a long time. And she is saying that she does not get why people are sensitive about blackface.
It's hard to tell because it's too easy. It's too easy to miss that point. As much as you've heard that people get upset when they say, why are you dressing in blackface? When you've heard it, they probably continued on with the next sentence and the next one. Mm-hmm. You'd have to plug your ears and ignore it, which is possibility because that's what we do. When someone's uncomfortable with someone saying, I'm offended by that, especially when it's a racial minority in this country, we go, yeah, but you know what? I'm uncomfortable with you telling me that what I did is offensive to you, so I'm just going to ignore the rest of what you had to say. I'm going to stop with you're offended and say why.
Yeah.
And then after you tell me why, I'm not going to listen. So it's a really hard thing. Who knows? I don't think it does her much of a service to say that she doesn't understand it, but because now she's catching a lot of backlash in the media on it.
There's one thing.
So what would you do that for purposefully?
Yeah. Maybe she's trying to get back at the good graces of conservative Americans after making that switch earlier. I honestly don't know. That's me just guessing. But there was one thing. I don't know if you noticed this, but this is like the most delicious, like, false equivalency I think I've heard. There's this offense when a white person uses blackface or a black person uses whiteface.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Is that an equal thing? Is that an equal concern? What is the history of whiteface?
Yeah, did Dave Chappelle do it? I know. I always think about the Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live sketch when he acted like a white guy. Many black comedians have done stuff like that.
And there's
that, right?
White girls with the film.
Right?
Okay, so technically there is a history in the arts. I don't think it's the same.
Of whiteface. Exactly, because you're not taking jobs from white actors. You're also not, after you perpetuate this, whatever stereotypes you're pushing by acting like a white person, it doesn't get flooded into society where positions of authority act a certain way towards that majority group, white folks, or our system ends up disenfranchising them over it, or people in society just start attacking them and thinking that they're more animalistic. It's not the same. So it's hard to say there's a reverse racism when the society doesn't fulfill it. Our society pushed racism, and it always kept it that way. It's not a reverse nature of it. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think overall, whether intentionally or not, what she's doing there is what the role of conservative media is these days, is to tell people, conservative Americans, you do not need to learn. You do not need to change. You don't have to rethink anything. You've thought it your whole life. It's probably fine. Don't actually question any of the beliefs that you hold. The concerns of people who do not look like you do not matter. And that comes through loud and clear. Thank you, JR, for joining us. Great to have you on. And then we're going to have you back on tomorrow. Should be awesome. Thank you for watching. Tomorrow, much more to talk about. We'll see you then. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.